From the Land de Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the second day of February 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes. We'll discuss carbon markets from the perspective of a couple of former senators, one Republican and one Democrat, and then we'll take a look at the weather forecast, too. That with Drew Lerner right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn today settled 622.5. It was 12 and a quarter lower for the day. However, it had a range all the way up to 640.75, so had gains on the day, and then finished with the losses. The December futures down 4.75 at 573 for the corn. March soybeans managed to hold on to gains at 1545.25. The November at 1389.75, up 7.75. Bean meal 90 cents lower. The bean oil up 15 cents, and wheat futures were down 14 in the soft red. They settled at $7.55. The hard red finished at $7.69.5, down 16.75. Live cattle futures finished at $146.90, $1.52.5 higher on the day. Feeders were up $3.17.5, and lean hogs at $1.45 higher, $99.12.5 the final price there. Crude oil at $88.09 a barrel, down 11 cents. Gasoline at $2.60.1. Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing from Hollister, Missouri, is out of the office this afternoon, though I did talk to her on Tuesday evening as the market was again rallying. I asked her about the wild day Tuesday and the rally in the market going into Wednesday and what her perceptions of this part of the market might be, especially for soybean.
Well, it was definitely a wild day. I mean, we went up and we tested the 162% retracement on the May and the March beans. Those are some almost unheard of numbers. You normally will, you know, go past by 33% perhaps, or maybe 38%. And so it's just a little nerve-wracking, Todd, to be honest with you, because suddenly now all the guys that are infamous for wanting to get in when the top is in are saying, I got to get in. And, you know, we kind of give that some some credence when you start going to the hairdresser and the hairdresser's talking about the soybean and the corn prices. You know, that makes a person nervous. In other words, you know, a lot of the news is in the market, and, you know, we've been heavily trading the Russian-Ukraine situation, and also, you know, the lowering of the soybean crop down in South America. And how long are we going to continue to trade that is the question. So all I'm saying is be cautious, be careful, take advantage of these opportunities. You know, if you've got a chance to be able to put in a decent price floor on your corn and your beans now for next year, why don't you do that? You can always roll it higher, but it can also go lower.
You mentioned the Russia-Ukraine issue as a fundamental within the marketplace. Of course, the South American soybean crop has been playing a big role, and the crop keeps getting a bit smaller.
That's right. And, you know, it's Dr. Korda in the air, he actually lowered his bean crop by 4 million metric tons down to 130 million. So that's 4 million below where we are at the USDA level. And His reasoning is, and I believe it's true, he said, even though the weather in southern Brazil is improving, they had 2 or 3 weeks of over 100 degrees plus, and it really took a heavy toll on the soybeans in western Paraná, southern Mato Grosso, Mato Grosso do Sul, Santa Catarina, Rio Grande do Sul. Those are all big production areas, and so those record high or near record high temperatures, and then you couple that with the intensity of the sun. That's the thing. When Jeff and I were down there, was just hard. You know, you're that much closer to the equator. It's not unusual for them. You know, we always hear about them waiting to start to plant. That's because their soil will be 140 degrees, 2 inches down. And so we don't understand what that's like here in North America at all. But as the surveys have been coming in, more and more of the surveys are saying production is going to continue to probably get lower and lower. Now, ABF, which is the Brazilian Association of Vegetable Oil Producers, they lowered theirs, but they're at 135.8 after they lowered it. So who's right? You know, you really don't know. But they also lowered their estimate for soybean exports. Previously, there were 91.1 million metric tons. They dropped that to 86.9 million metric tons, but they didn't change the domestic crush at all. And so, you know, that's the problem with South America. For all of us sitting here in our states, we don't understand that Brazil itself is as big as the entire United States. And so being able to get the proper information from one place to the next is really tough. And corn supplies down there are very tight, and they're going to stay tight probably through June until they get into the Safrinha corn. You know, the livestock industry, Todd, is mostly in southern Brazil, and they're always at a corn deficit. So they always have to bring in corn, and they mostly import it, you know, out of Mato Grosso or Goiás, where most of the corn is produced, as a Safrinha crop, and that's done after beans. And now, you know, this is really complicating things, because Paraná, which is also a very large livestock producing state, they generally produce enough Safrinha corn to meet their needs every single year. But, you know, with this late planting that we saw, early frost, remember that when that came through, it really impacted first crop corn and the Safrinha corn to so much of an extent that we might see those guys in southern Brazil again have to import out of Argentina and Paraguay. They imported 3 million metric tons last year. So Doc says that the situation in southern Brazil looks an awful lot like last year. You know, severe drought coupled with high temperatures, greatly reducing the first crop corn. As a result, you know, the southern states are forced to import. And so everything's going to hang on what the Safrinha corn does this year. And that's not going to be harvested until June. So, you know, if you combine all of this, you combine all the livestock industries, in other words, you combine Paraná and southern Brazil together, basically they would probably need to import at least 8 million metric tons of corn. Now, is it likely it'll come from us? Maybe not, but you just don't know, because Argentina's got a ton of its own problems. And so one thing you can be sure of is domestic corn prices are going to stay high. You know, and so that would be good for us, because that continues to support our prices here too. And, you know, if you look at Argentina, I talked a little bit last week about how the soil moisture was improving, but it's far, far, far and away not improved enough. And so, a significant portion of that crop still needs a lot of additional moisture. And they're saying that, well, they had mostly dry weather over the weekend, and the forecast is really only calling for scattered showers in the next 6 to 10 days with seasonal temperatures, which means it's going to be warm. If that would be the case, we're going to see moisture stress coming out of there again. And then on the other side, you got to be very careful. Remember the old saying, be careful what you wish for? Well, parts of Argentina got 10 to 16 inches of rain. I have pictures of cornfields that are flooded over, people sitting on top of their cars, you know, all kinds of things. So those are really, you know, everything is really, really touchy when you look at that whole situation. Now, the soybean crop condition down in Argentina, this is really a kind of interesting condition. Last week, we saw 27% in the poor to very poor, 43% in the fair, and we had about 38%, I think it is, in the good, or in excellent. Now this week we have 19% in the poor to very poor, so that's improved. But we have 43% in the fair, and then what is it this week? 38% in the excellent. Moisture-wise, of course, that's because there's been an improvement in the moisture. And when you look at corn down there, last week we were 37% poor. This week we are 29% poor. We were 41% fair. Well, we're 40% fair. And we were 22% excellent. And this week we're 32% excellent. You know, and so there's definitely been an improvement coming with the moisture improvements. Can it hold? That's the big question, I guess. And you know, the one thing we have to always remember, and I know for all of you who've listened to me for such a long time, you probably think I just, you know, I can't hammer it home hard enough. The futures market is about the future. It's about looking to the future. It's not about waiting for the information and then trading it. they're already trading all of the future information. So just be very careful when you make your decisions on what you're going to do.
Hey, Jackie, thank you so much for making yourself available on this Tuesday evening so that we can record for our Wednesday program. I appreciate that.
Not a problem, Todd. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, too.
Jackie Vakes is with Total Farm Marketing from Hollister, Missouri. Let's take up carbon markets again today, this time from a policy perspective in Washington, D.C., where the Bipartisan Policy Center, which is a think tank that promotes bipartisanship, has put forth a brand new policy that it hopes will advance bipartisanship in this area. It's called Federal Policies to Advance Natural Climate Solutions, and of course will be promoted on Capitol Hill as a way for farmers to participate in the carbon markets. Former Senators Saxby Chambliss, a Republican from Georgia, and Heidi Heitkamp, a Democrat from North Dakota, are pushing this set of policy issues. I spoke with them earlier today about it. I asked first if they could explain exactly what they hope to accomplish.
So I'll start here, Todd. After the 2020 election, the bipartisan council decided that certainly climate change was going to be at the top of the list for the new administration, and agriculture has never had a seat at the table in the discussion of climate change. But we should be, because we have the opportunity to be a major contributor to the issue. So they asked Senator Heitkamp and myself to co-chair a task force to delve into the issue and to make recommendations over the next 12 months. And that's what we've done. I was very slow to the climate change trough, as many of your listeners are also. But too many and more violent hurricanes, too many forest fires on the East Coast as well as out West, and too many quick, big temperature range swings made me realize that there's something going on out there. So Heidi and I decided to engage to try and make sure that agriculture has a seat at the table when the debate begins.
Senator Heitkamp, if you could address the conservation efforts that you hope NRCS and others will put forward as one of the primary goals of your policies.
Well, I think one of the primary goals of our policy is meeting that requirement that this be voluntary. I know there's a lot of dialogue out there right now about is this going to be mandated? Where is this headed? And what we're saying, this Bipartisan Policy Center, as Saxby just explained, was really our effort to head off that kind of, you know, do it to you, not with you. Let's sit down and talk about where agriculture is right now. There is a great program here in North Dakota because we have a lot of ranchers in Western North Dakota, the EQIP. EQIP basically provides dollars for fencing, for water, but it allows smaller producers to produce more animal units on a smaller plot of land, right? But EQIP is overprescribed. By that, I mean, not everybody who wants to do EQIP can, because there isn't enough money allocated to that program in USDA. We're saying that's crazy. I mean, if we have a practice that we know not only has the benefit of sequestering CO2 in the soil, but also has a water and habitat and range soil benefit, why aren't we funding it? And so these are the kinds of programs that we're looking at. What are the existing conservation programs that can be enhanced and modified to really begin to address climate? But we're proud of the work that we've done in identifying challenges, which is, well, how does a producer get into this? How does a producer learn about EQIP? How do they learn about cover crops? How do they implement this? We're really asking USDA to build a workforce to do the research that it takes, so that if in fact a producer does it and they want to sell carbon credits on a voluntary market, as you see the growing interest in, then let's figure out how that can happen. And so what it is it's enhancement of existing conservation programs, a build out of technology and research and a workforce. The forestry area has been particularly enlightening for me because I don't deal with forestry. Saxby has brought so much to the table along with all of his friends in the forestry industry. We think there's great opportunity through certain forestry practices that are widely recognized as sequestering CO2 to be adapted by so many more people and basically provided extra income flow for those producers who utilize their land in this way. Again, we can't emphasize enough, this is do no harm. If a farmer is practicing doing what they're doing right now, they say, the farm program works for me, I have my crop insurance, now they're trying to take that away. That's absolutely not true. I don't want to put any more land in CRP. Nothing in our recommendations would require that you do any of this. We're simply saying that if you adapt certain practices, and we know from soil scientists that we can, in fact, sequester CO2 and be part of the solution technologically. If you do this, then we're going to get you additional revenue. So it's almost like commoditizing the CO2 work that they're already doing and the enhancements that many producers will engage in.
It's not clear to me exactly what carbon sequestration is as it's related to the technical specifications. Clearly, the carbon markets have been trained to figure out a way to pay producers and farmers. I think you address some of this from the USDA's perspective in hopes that the government can step in and find a way to store data, one, maybe in a third party, and two, to define what these greenhouse gases are and exactly how you pay off of a carbon market. Can you talk about that as well?
Todd, this is going to be a very complex establishment of carbon markets. There's got to be a lot of clarity to the markets so that farmers and ranchers can understand it, number one. In fact, we were recommending that USDA and the Cooperative Extension Network should recruit private sector partners, including agricultural retailers, cooperatives, seed and feed companies, forest landowners, folks like that, and enlist these partners in integrating efforts to deploy extension services and other USDA capacities to help train, demonstrate, and disseminate information on climate smart practices, as well as programs that will be developed. Farmers need to understand what they have available and what the opportunity is available to them if they participate in the markets, that they can have an additional income stream to over and above what the Farm Bill programs provide them with them now.
We recognize the technological difficulties and that the market can be skittish because they're running reputational risks when they buy these credits. But we think this is solvable. And, you know, this is an issue that we focused on very heavily in the work that we did. We brought together a group of soil scientists, of professionals who sat down and said, these are things that you need to be concerned about, and these are things you need to work on. We all need to work together to build the capacity to guarantee that CO2 is actually sequestered and that people who buy these credits are not running reputational risk when they buy the credits. And we think this is a problem that with the right resources applied to it, we can overcome.
One final question. How will you put this forth on Capitol Hill?
Well, we are not the only group that is working on this issue. There's another coalition that we have engaged with. And we're going to work together on trying to figure out the next steps. But we're reaching out to the respective committees, agriculture committee primarily, on the Hill and educating them about what our work is what we have realize that there are recommendations here that can be positive as they debate in the Farm Bill, and that debate is going to beginning this year with a new Farm Bill going to be written next year. So we have already reached out to those folks, and we're going to continue to do that.
Thank you both so much. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
That's former U.S. Senator Saxby Chambliss, a Republican from Georgia. He was joined by Heidi Heitkamp, a Democrat and also a former senator from North Dakota, to talk about carbon sequestration, carbon markets, and a policy that's being put forth by the Bipartisan Policy Center. It's a think tank based in Washington, D.C. Drew Lerner now joins us from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City to discuss the weather forecast. Thanks, Drew, for taking the time with us. Can you start in Argentina for me? The northern growing regions of that country have had the toughest time, I think, with dry weather. Is that still the case?
It is, until we get out another day or two. Yes, temperatures of 100 to 110 degrees have occurred frequently since the, I will call it the third week in December. Now, there's been a couple of breaks in there, but I know we strung together a 11-day period of such temperatures, took a little break, and then we got another period of 10 days in there. It's just been, it's been nasty, and it hasn't rained much at all. Now, they did get a little bit of rain in this past week, and they've got some more coming up here for this weekend in particular. Some of that will occur probably as early as tomorrow night. The rain should offer a bit of relief, but, you know, it's been so hot and so dry, I doubt seriously we're going to see a big return of the original crops. Now, there's a lot of chatter that Paraguay will plant more safrina crops than usual. It's getting a little late for them in some areas, but I think that might be an attempt that takes place. But with this new ridge developing in Argentina, I'm afraid that Paraguay is probably going to end up turning pretty dry again, just like northeastern Argentina, and for that matter, all of Argentina, as we go forward through this next 10 days or so.
Harvest is taking place of the soybean crop in the center-west part of Brazil. How's that going?
Yeah, that's it's actually moving along okay relative to last year, but I don't know if that's saying a whole lot, because last year we were about 30 days behind normal because of the delayed planting that took place. So field work is advancing. It is playing a nasty game of dodgeball with rain, and it is raining a little bit too often across much of center west and center south Brazil. The Brazilians are famous for being able to harvest their crops with the showers and thunderstorms that occur every day. And they're doing the best job they can do, but I'm afraid that it's a little bit more moisture than what they were hoping for. The soil assessment we did yesterday showed that the ground in Mato Grosso is almost completely saturated. Now, that's a state that's got kind of sandy soils, and it doesn't hold water real well. But with it being as wet as it is right now, if they don't cut out some of the rain, they're going to have some increased concern over the condition of the crop and certainly more delay to farming activity. Now, I think they'll be able to get out probably to maybe early next week with the continuation of wet weather. But after that, I think they'll take at least a little bit of a break with less frequent, less significant rain. And that should put them back on track a little bit. But the heaviest rain is going to shift from Mato Grosso into Minas Gerais. Now, Minas Gerais is not nearly as important of a soybean production area as Mato Grosso, but Minas Gerais has already had some flooding along with Sao Paulo in the past couple of weeks, and it looks like those two areas are going to be vulnerable to some more of that. So it's not the best scenario, to say the least. And of course, the market knows that, judging from the prices we've seen recently.
Indeed it does. Here in the United States, big storm making its way through the Midwest, but could you talk me through maybe the southern plains through the northwestern part of the Corn Belt and the northern plains and kind of conditions there?
Yeah, you know, we're dealing with this new storm system that's certainly plaguing a broad area from hard breadwinner wheat country all the way down to central parts of Texas. And from there, all the way through the heart of the lower and eastern Midwest. And the storm is coming in front of some very cold air. I think tomorrow morning, Northern Minnesota and northeastern parts of North Dakota will see temperatures below minus 30 once again. We'll have negative 20s and negative teens surrounding that. And sub-zero readings could occur as far down to the south as the Texas Panhandle. Maybe not so much tomorrow morning for them as much as it will probably be on Friday morning. And all of that cold is actually going to push right on into the heart of Texas. And if you remember, last February, we had an incredible cold surge that occurred down there that caused power outages and bursted a lot of pipes, water pipes, and really caused a lot of mayhem. This is somewhat similar to that, not quite as cold as it was a year ago. But the energy markets are already rallying about the potential that there's going to be a problem down there. And so we're watching that pretty closely. Before that gets there on Friday morning, it's going to be nasty today and tomorrow with snow and sleet and freezing rain occurring all over down that way, stressing livestock. The moisture is going to be lightest, of course, in the hard red winter wheat areas of western Texas, Texas Panhandle, where the drought is going to continue to live on despite the fact that we're going to have some snow for a little while. I don't think they'll get more than a quarter of an inch of moisture out of the deal. They'll take whatever they can get, but that's not going to bust any drought.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
You bet. Have a good day. Stay warm.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.